Hello, everybody, and welcome back for another episode of your favorite silly fairy tale show, Not Your Mother's Goose. We've got plenty of fun today. We'll take a full tour through the world of Tangled, learn about the National Hockey League's new Arendelle expansion franchise, and Rapunzel's Jukebox is back with a version of Penny Lane that's one of my favorite things Andrew Mitchell has done for us so far. Of course, that's probably not why you're here. Today is the day that we can finally announce the winner in our summer-long Tournament of Disney Villains. The votes are in, and the baddest of all time will be officially revealed just a few minutes from now. Now, if you haven't been following along, the championship bout pits the number one seed in the old school region, that's Maleficent, against the number three new school seed, who is Scar. Maleficent stormed through her side of the bracket, following a first-round bye with dominant wins over Cruella de Vil and the Evil Queen from Snow White. Scar, meanwhile, has been tested the whole way, knocking off number six Hades in the opener, narrowly upsetting Ursula in the quarters, and then ousting top-seeded Jafar in the semis. I'll tell you this much for now. We got 476 votes in the finals, that's the most of any round by quite a bit, and it was ridiculously close. I counted at least 10 different lead changes as the votes bounced back and forth along the way, and the final winning margin is 6 votes out of 476. So this is just a tease for now. I'll give you a full rundown of the action a little bit later in the show. I will for now, though, give you highlights of some of the spirited comments we received from voters arguing for our favorites. The Team Scar folks were definitely staying on message, and the majority of their comments highlighted the whole killed brother, blamed nephew mantra. One voter expanded on that, though, saying, quote, "Scar is the only Disney villain to successfully kill a protagonist. While Maleficent came close a few times, she never succeeded." Another person focused on the lengthy period of time that Scar was in charge, saying, quote, "Scar actually succeeded for quite a long time, even killed his main opposition. Granted, Simba got him in the end, he actually got a lot further than most other villains." Now, the Maleficent supporters, though, they were a vociferous bunch themselves, and they had comments all over the place. Things from, "she just wanted an invite," to, "dragon will barbecue lion meat," I like that one, to, "she's the mistress of all evil, no one can top her." Then we had a few voters who I think were torn and maybe wrote the comment just to figure out who they were going to vote for. Try this one on. Quote, "after considerable research, uncovering numerous plot concepts and character origin stories, I conclude that Maleficent is one badass, anyway, with evil intentions that no amount of Valium can subdue. In a costume competition, I would sooner choose to dress as Maleficent than a scraggly lion like Scar. I'd prefer to watch a movie with a plot focused on Maleficent than one about Scar. Both characters are voiced by impressive theatrical talent. And while I prefer the character story and more regal villainous style of Maleficent, in a contest for the baddest Disney villain, my vote belongs to Scar, the first animated Disney antagonist slash villain to intentionally murder a heroic protagonist." Now that is thorough. I sent it along to our expert panel, and our Cruella supporter wrote back and said, "that has to be my sister." I checked. She was right. Anyway, you can see now the dilemma that our voters faced and why the final margin was so razor thin. We'll be back later in the show with more voter comments and to announce the winner. Stay tuned. Tangled. Wait a second, I can hear you saying. Didn't you already do Rapunzel like 12 episodes ago or something? Well, yes. But then they aired Tangled on ABC a while back, and I decided to watch it. And seeing how it is basically as close to the original Rapunzel as if they just animated Crystal Gale's autobiography, I realized we need to go back and take a separate look at this one. I mean, they took out the radishes. Though actually, I'm okay with that. This time, the story starts with a magic flower that keeps you permanently young. That flower belongs to a gal named Mother Gothel, who looks suspiciously like Cher. Apparently, the animators actually did that on purpose. Lucky Cher, not many people get to both sing with Sunny and get turned into a really annoying Disney villain, except maybe for Sunny's duet with Jafar. Also, I will tell you that Gothel nearly made it into the villains tournament this year. Joe Lunardi had her as one of the first four out of the field, but didn't quite make the cut. Anyhow, getting back to the story, Cher keeps using the flower to turn back time, right until the neighbors borrow it from her and use it to heal their sick queen instead. Then a peeved Gothel finds out that this queen had a baby, and all the flower power ends up in the kid's hair. Needing some help to stay young, Mother Gothel then sneaks in to steal the hair, but finds out that it doesn't work once it's cut off of the baby, so she just steals the kid instead. Young MG then locks the girl, who is Rapunzel, of course, in a tower, telling her that it's best she stay there forever, lest she encounter someone on the outside that wants to talk about the extended warranty on her car. Rapunzel obliges, spending her days doing some Michelangelo-style ceiling painting, hanging with a chameleon, and once a year watching the big release of those Skylantern thingies, unaware that it's actually been organized by the king and the queen in hopes of getting their missing kid back. Some folks put pictures on milk cartons, others go the lantern route, apparently. Eventually, Rapunzel asks to go check out Lantern Launch 2000 in person. Of course, Gothel is having none of this outing business, in case somebody with a Flowbee might show up and ruin the magic locks. Gothel does, however, agree to run off on a quest to get Rapunzel new paint from the local Sherwin-Williams, which is apparently like a 3-day trek. And you know nothing ever goes wrong when you leave your stir-crazy teenager home alone for a few days. Rather than throw a rager, however, Rapunzel instead has her weekend interrupted when a handsome thief gets busted double-crossing his associate thieves and somehow ends up in Rapunzel's tower. Rapunzel proves to be actually quite worldly, bashing this pretty boy creep named Flynn Rider over the head with a fry pan, which does highlight the fact that she's somehow got a full working kitchen at the top of her 500-foot tower. I bet installing that gas line was a joy. Rapunzel stuffs Flynn inside an armoire that she stole from the set of Beauty and the Beast, but eventually lets him out and negotiates a trade. Here's the deal. Flynn will take her to see the lantern show, and she'll buy him a sweet Coach handbag that she saw on HSN one afternoon. Actually, that's not quite it. What she's going to do is give him his satchel back, which happens to include the spiffy crown he filched. Of course, that crown is actually Rapunzel's, but she doesn't know that. Okay, if you can keep this straight, this quest then goes about as well as the time I was supposed to go on a vacation to New Hampshire, and after they canceled my flight, they rebooked me on a different plane to a different state. In their case, the duo takes a visit to this hole-in-the-wall bar patronized by the Brute Squad from The Princess Bride. Gothel shows up, and the next thing you know, Rapunzel and Flynn are underwater in a cave. Now, at that point, it's soul-bearing time. Flynn offers the earth-shattering confession that Flynn Rider is a made-up name, you don't say, and that his real name is Eugene Fitzherbert. In which case, I understand the idea of making a change to Flynn. Rapunzel, of course, can't match that in the pitch-black cave revelation department and has to settle for saying, all I got is that my hair glows in the dark if I sing. Come again? The dynamic duo then use this glowing hair to get out of the cave and manage to find one of those boats that they row around at the Venetian in Vegas and use that to watch the lanterns. Of course, before we can have any obligatory romantic moment, Flotsam and Jetsam come and knock the boat over for Ursula. Or something like that. That might be the wrong story. Actually, what happens is Flynn's former goon buddies show up, now in cahoots with Gothel. They capture Flynn and send him off to the gallows, presumably for his previous thefts. Gothel then comes and tells Rapunzel that there will still be life after love, as long as she moves back to the tower with her Fountain of Youth hair ASAP. Now, this is getting really long, so let's try to cut to the chase. Next up, Flynn escapes in large part due to the efforts of a horse who thinks he's a dog, along with a mime. I don't write this stuff all, I'm just here to tell you what happened. Anyway, he ends up back at the tower, but then Gothel stabs him, so that's pretty sweet. Ace hostage negotiator Rapunzel, who has figured out by now that she's the long-lost princess, steps in and agrees to permanently do Gothel's bidding if she can first heal the dying Flynn / Eugene. Now, Gothel recognizes that's a pretty good deal and accepts, but Flynn ruins the plan by knifing off the magic hair and then dying. Now, if you've been paying attention for the past 6 hours or so, you remember that cutting the hair off kills its magic. It also turns the hair brown, and since Flynn isn't real sharp with the whole layering thing, he ends up leaving Rapunzel with a bit of a punk rocker look. It's a lot rougher for Cher, though, who ages about 500 years and 30 seconds to the point that she is not your mother's Gothel. And then she falls out a window. Okay, almost done. We can't really end the movie with Eugene dead on the tower floor, so we do have to call in that fairy tale mainstay, the MOEC, the moment of extreme convenience. In this case, that comes in the form of Rapunzel starting to cry, and instead of her tears curing blindness like in the original, we get super-powered waterworks that actually bring dead people back to life. Mr. Eugene is back and kicking, and he takes Rapunzel for a reunion with the king and the queen. Now, how they confirm that this person, who appears now that she might be a member of the Go-Go's, is their long-lost daughter, that's not really made clear. But one way or another, Ma and Pa take over from Gothel, they declare, "I've got you, babe," and everyone lives happily ever after, including the mime. And we're done. It's another day, and there's more news to report. We just don't have it here. Try this instead. BB-8 wins bowling tournament at Star Wars cast reunion party. George Washington concerned when recruit arrives on pony, sporting feather and hat and discussing pasta. And from the sports desk, NHL expands to Arendelle. The National Hockey League continues to grow, and if past expansions into Seattle and Las Vegas strike you as odd for a sport played on ice, then their latest plan might make a bit more sense. Commissioner Gary Bettman announced yesterday that the league's Board of Governors had voted to award a new expansion franchise to Arendelle. Said Bettman, quote, "While we are excited to bring hockey to all corners of the world, including the deserts of southern Nevada, this time the plan was to get back to our roots, the ice. And nowhere says ice quite like Arendelle." While the team doesn't have an official nickname yet, monikers such as the Frost, the Slush, and the Cubes are reportedly under consideration. Team General Manager Kristoff says he plans to hire former Anaheim Ducks star Teemu Selanne to coach, unless, of course, real Mighty Ducks coach Gordon Bombay is available. He also said he's not too worried about finding a Zamboni. League officials refused to comment on the selection process that led to Arendelle's successful bid, but it was clear that a wintry landscape was a must, as Ice Planet Hoth and World 6 from Super Mario 3 were also rumored to be finalists. League insiders speculated that Arendelle's ability to build their new Ice Palace Stadium in, quote, a couple of hours, was a major factor contributing to the final choice. Speaking of building things, if you've got a do-it-yourself project coming up around your house, this week's sponsor could be right up your alley.
Been wondering what the Big Bad Wolf is up to these days? Well, we have exciting news for you. Big Bad may be retired from eating pigs, but you definitely want to check out his latest venture, and he's making a howling debut in the hardware business. Move over, Lowe's. It's time to huff and puff over to Blow's, the Big Bad Wolf's new home improvement warehouse. Whether you're a pig or a princess, Blow's is your one-stop shop for whatever your next project entails. Building a house? We've got the finest sticks and straw on the market. Not to mention bricks for you high rollers out there. And if you're looking to carve yourself a real boy, just head straight to our lumber yard. Blow's is your destination for interior projects. Just browse our showroom for everything from bulbs for your magic lamp to enough cleaning supplies to spiff up the house in time to get to the ball. Shop this week for deals on dwarf-sized pickaxes and enough glue and fasteners to keep all the king's horses and all the king's men hard at work for years. Don't waste your money with our magical competitors like Weasley Hardware or Gnome Depot. Bring the hair on your chinny chin chin down to Blow's and knock those prices down today.
Welcome back. By now you surely recognize the familiar voice of our friend Brian Weifrich, who now has hawked a fitness program, a motorcycle jumping cow, a dating service, a massage parlor, and a hardware store on the show. Stay tuned to see what we can make him do next. Meanwhile, more news. Flynn Rider testing new Rider Cup after joining Softball League with Rapunzel. Marketing gurus unsure why new Mr. Clean brand shampoo not selling better. And this just in from the North Pole. Rudolph switches to compact fluorescent nose. Rudolph, the red-nosed reindeer, didn't know what to expect when Santa arrived with a small wrapped box for his birthday. Imagine his surprise upon discovering that Santa's elves had made him a new energy-efficient compact fluorescent nose. "I have so much more energy now," said Rudolph as he got hooked onto the sleigh for a test flight in advance of the Christmas season. 60 watts can really take it out of you. I used to be tired by the time we got to Greenland. Now I'm still going strong all the way to Australia, even in the fog. Rudolph acknowledged that the look of the new spiral nose design is an adjustment, and that the laughing and calling him names did return for a while. "All of the other reindeer thought I'd had some work done, it's true," he said. "But now they're jealous. And just wait till the elves learn how to make LEDs." This Little Piggy. All right, go ahead and take off your shoes and socks if you want to play along at home. It's time for a quick discussion of This Little Piggy. First of all, though, I gotta tell you, I'm starting to wonder if pigs aren't in just as much need of a fairy tale makeover as wolves are these days. Because we've got the three little pigs, two-thirds of whom are portrayed as bumbling buffoons, or at least at the pignorant end of the scale, if you will. And then when we talk about the little piggy family, a pretty high percentage of them don't emerge looking too great either. Seeing how in the real world, I've got a friend whose pet pig lives in the house and knows how to get itself a blanket if it gets cold sleeping at night, it makes me wonder if the folks at the pig PR agency are just sending the wrong people over from casting. At the end of the day, Miss Piggy seems to come out looking like the genius of the lot of the ones that make it on TV. Anyway, let's zero in on the Little Piggy family a bit more closely. We actually start off pretty strong. This little piggy went to market. Now, as long as we assume that the piggy is doing some shopping at the market rather than going to market as like a four-pack of pork chops, then we're doing pretty well. He's being responsible, he's taking initiative, all that good stuff. This little piggy is the equivalent of the pig with the brick house. But from there, it is downhill fast. Next up, this little piggy stayed home. Okay, now that doesn't have to mean he's lazy. Maybe he was just a DoorDash guy or something. But then we get to piggy number three. He lives up to his location in the middle by pretty much flipping off all the steers at the farm by ordering up a roast beef sandwich. That hardly seems like the way to make friends. Finally, we wrap things up by literally starving the fourth piggy, who has none. Maybe he tried to get lunch from the soup Nazi rather than the market and got no soup for you'd. And then we wrap it up with the annoying one, who just squeals wee 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 all the way home. Now, my guess is that he was probably on his way to getting none as well, but then number three may have stuffed him with some roast beef just to shut up the wee wee wees for a while. There is one good thing about piggy number five, though, and I do suppose it's better to go wee wee wee, three wee if you will, rather than just going wee wee all the way home in the backseat of the swinemobile. So let's just take our small victories. All right, the time has come, as the walrus would say. Time to reveal the results of this thrilling finale to our tournament of Disney villains. You know, we went through the whole tournament with really only one close showdown. That was Scar over Ursula in the second round. But I had a feeling that this last match was going to be different. And when the early votes stood at 31-29 in favor of Maleficent, I started writing down running tallies as we went along, and what a seesaw this was. We went from 31-29 Maleficent to 56-55 Scar, 75-70 Maleficent, to 90-84 Scar, and then back to Maleficent. We eventually got to a 134-119 Maleficent advantage. That was 15 votes, and I thought, okay, maybe this is it. And then I logged back in not that long afterwards, and we were tied right back up at 145 each. 15 votes turned out to be the biggest lead that either side got, but after that, we actually had multiple ties. Then Scar took the lead. Then Maleficent took it back. Then Scar took it back at 195-194. Then Maleficent. Then Scar at 203-202. Then back to Maleficent. At 429 votes in the books, we were at 215-214. That left it all to be decided in what would be 47 more votes at the end. Before we get to those final votes, though, let's take a look at a few more of the great comments we received, because I loved what you had to say. And by the way, we did have a return of the voter who still thinks that Scar ate Mufasa. But here are some of your other Scar voters. One said, "Scar is the worst. Not sure that makes him the baddest villain, but hate is powerful, and I don't like the guy one bit." Here was a personal favorite of mine. Someone said, "Scar is the most evil of them all, plus he hasn't had cheekbone work done." Whatever your criteria are, folks. Finally, we have a Scar voter who pins his demise on the hyenas, which is probably fair, saying, "Conquered Animal Kingdom with nothing but words. Maintained rule and would have held it, but for his misplaced trust in incompetence." Now, on the other side of the coin, and I mentioned this back at the outset, the Maleficent voters had a lot to say. Things like this. "Not even sure Scar could make a scratch, let alone a scar against the likes of Maleficent's powerful skills," and that's skills with two Z's. "Bye bye, scrawny cat, you should have perished in the ocean with the sea witch." Another one offers, She cursed a newborn to die because she didn't get invited to a party. Plus, she turned into the coolest dragon ever and was voiced by Eleanor Audley, a tiny woman with a booming and powerful voice. And then finally, check out the level of analysis from this Maleficent voter who seems destined to host Villain Center on ESVN. Had the opportunity to spend some time with both camps over the past couple weeks, and they are ready to play. Maleficent has been extremely impressive in practice. Spells and magic continue to roll off her fingers, and with the heavy hitter, the dragon, continuing to provide dominating impacts, it's hard to see Scar coming out on top of this one. At the Scar camp, they've fallen back on the basics of being evil. Their practices of shoving lions to their death have been really clicking lately. The hyenas have made some big gains in their joke department, providing some real zingers, which I feel they may employ to catch Maleficent off guard. I did get some reports of a possible secret play of eating the opponents. Didn't see it in practice, but come game time, if things are getting tight, I could see the buffet starting to roll out. Overall, I have a hard time seeing Maleficent not walking away with the W here. The evil game from Maleficent is just at another level from Playground Annex of pushing people to their death. Close one, but Maleficent on top by two poisoned apples. Now that is the kind of analysis I like. So who prevailed? Did Scar stomp Maleficent to her doom or shove her off a cliff Evil Queen style? Or did the dragon appear and cause Scar's second career loss by incineration? In the final 36 hours, with time running out, the late votes tilted ever so slightly to Maleficent. She pushed the lead out to 9, and even though Scar did hit a 3 at the buzzer, it was not enough. By a final score of 241 to 235, Maleficent has officially won the Tournament of Disney Villains and claims the title of the baddest of all time. So, congrats to Maleficent. Well done. Thank you for not engulfing me in flames along the way. And good job, Scar, as well. You have definitely earned a dishonorable mention by coming up just 6 votes short. Thanks so much to everybody who participated, especially our expert panel. This was a lot of fun. I think there may be some more tournaments coming up in our future. But before we go, let's wrap up the finale with the words of one more Maleficent voter who didn't think the match would be close and who summarized her thoughts as follows. Scar seems to be fueled solely by a family squabble and some sibling rivalry. He possesses no magic powers, and his cronies are but 3 deranged hyenas. Maleficent, on the other hand, is arguably the most powerful villain of all time. Using her magic staff, which is said to wield, quote, all the powers of hell, she is no stranger to sorcery such as projection, divination, telepathy, superhuman strength, petrification, protection charms, and teleportation. In my opinion, Scar would find himself her house cat if these two were to truly battle, end rant. And that, as they say, is all she wrote. Well, now that we officially have a baddest of all time, we do need one more thing to wrap up this episode and to appease all the angry Scar voters out there before I find myself with a suspicious stampede running through my backyard. And the best way to accomplish that goal is definitely to spin up a tune on Rapunzel's jukebox. Andrew Mitchell, our friend from the other ship, literally that's the name of the band, he's back with another song, and I really love what he did with this one. If you haven't listened to our Behind the Music special, you really should. It's got a great interview with Andrew talking about how he puts these songs together. The short version is, I send him some lyrics, and a while later something amazing comes back, and it sometimes involves a kazoo. But today's selection is our second crack at a Beatles song, and Mother Goose herself has finally gotten her own tune. Instead of meeting all the folks Paul McCartney spotted around Liverpool, we get all of her characters. Here it is, Andrew Mitchell's take on Penny Lane on Rapunzel's Jukebox, here on Not Your Mother's Goose.
Oh, Mother Goose, she wrote the stories of your childhood, of little pigs and hungry wolves that huff and blow, and all the people you'll get to know. There's some weird ones, yo. On the corner there's a lady living in a shoe, and all her children eat their bread and hit the sack. Itsy bitsy spiders talking smack till it starts to rain down the drain. Mother Goose is writing tales and nursery rhymes. Where are heroes keep committing crimes. I'm looking at you, Jack. Out in the storm, there is a princess looking for a bed. Under her mattress, there's a pesky lumpy pea. You know the pea was put there by the queen, which is kind of mean. Mother Goose is writing tales and nursery rhymes. Horner Kid is eating pies with plums for little Jack. Upon a tuffet in the middle of Miss Muffet's yard, a different spider's looking for some curds and whey. But old Miss Muffet's not a fan today, so she runs away. In Drury Lane, you've got the chance to meet the Muffin Man. Well, Frere Jacques once again is sleeping in, and the Emperor is flashing skin. He's a little vain, not a brain. Mother Goose is writing tales and nursery rhymes. There above the candlestick he flies, he's the most nimble Jack. Mother Goose is writing tales and nursery rhymes. All the classic stories of our times, Mother Goose.
Andrew Mitchell on Not Your Mother's Goose. Gosh, what a great job Andrew did with that. I think that's one of my favorites of everything that he's done so far. If you want to check out more songs, you can go to the Rapunzel's Jukebox page on notyourmothersgoose.com. There's all kinds of fun stuff there, both from Andrew and Tony D'Amico, so check it out. That's going to wrap things up for today, but don't go far. We'll be back soon with another episode, including taking a trip on the Oregon Trail, checking out Eeyore the Musical, and debuting a brand new segment where I'm actually going to need your help called The Fairy Tale Typo. Until then, thanks so much for tuning in. Congratulations to Maleficent, officially now the baddest of all time, and to Scar, the almost baddest of all time, but for 6 votes. That's it for today. The goose is loose. I'll see you next time on Not Your Mother's Goose.